This is Community Exchange, brought to you by ComFest Radio. Today, we're discussing international trade agreements and how international trade deals affect people and communities. We're talking with Stuart True from the Council of Canadians. But what are the major trade agreements that Canada has signed so far?
Well, apart from the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement from 1989, which was the first one that kicked us off, and then the North American Free Trade Agreement several years later, Canada has signed several free trade agreements with Latin America, with Jordan, with the European Free Trade Association countries, and we have about a dozen of those in place as well, and we continue to sign those, or Canada continues to sign those. On top of that, Canada is a prolific signer of foreign investment protection agreements, or FIPAs. We have about a dozen of those in place right now, mostly with African countries, Latin American countries, and you'll find that Canada tends to sign these things with countries where we have a lot of resource investments, financial, telecommunications, or mining investment in those countries.
So these are focused on, that's why you call them FIPA, the Foreign Investment Protection Agreement?
Protection agreement, exactly.
Okay, so we have NAFTA and we have FIPAs.
That's right. Those weren't major agreements, though. Those were just Canada continuing to sign these deals under the impression that this would be the best way to grow the Canadian economy.
Is that what you call bilateral between two countries?
That's right. That would be a bilateral free trade deal.
As compared to a major trade agreement among many countries?
That's right. Which an example of one of those would be the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement, which is being negotiated right now with 12 countries, and Canada's one of those. And negotiations for the TPP, as they call it, have been going on for about 2 or 3 years now. The next biggest agreement in terms of size, I suppose, for Canada is the Canada-European Union Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement. And in terms of the impact on Canada, this is the agreement to watch. Of the major trade talks happening right now, the CETA is going to have the biggest impact here in Canada.
Let's talk about the agreements that have been signed already. This would be NAFTA is the major one, I suppose.
Yes.
And that's for all of North America. So how has NAFTA affected Canada? Has it benefited Canada or has it hurt Canada? Or more specifically, has it benefited certain people and hurt certain people? Or is everybody benefiting from NAFTA?
Well, I suppose it depends who you ask that question. Now, the government will say NAFTA has benefited Canada, and the stat that they will use is that trade has tripled since we signed NAFTA. You know, it's more than tripled, actually, since we signed NAFTA. Therefore, it's been good for everyone. But, you know, if you ask other people, certain environmental organizations, or if you ask labor unions, has it benefited Canada, a lot of people will say, no, it hasn't. And they'll point to some of the impacts on salaries, they'll point to the impacts on the types of jobs that exist now or that have disappeared because of NAFTA. So for example, Canada's manufacturing sector was hit quite hard by the North American Free Trade Agreement as factories left Canada first and went to Mexico. And now they're leaving Mexico and going overseas, right? So we've lost a lot of jobs in that category of high-paid manufacturing jobs. Overall, we haven't seen a huge benefit in terms of salaries. People's salaries are the same in real terms as they were 20 years ago. In some cases, if you're in the lower bracket, your salary has gone down in that time period. So people aren't benefiting by this massive increase in trade. So you have to ask yourself, well, if there's money being made by free trade, and there is, and it's not being shared equally because salaries aren't going up, then who's got the money from free trade?
Well, who is benefiting from free trade, especially NAFTA? Where's the money going?
Well, it's going, as people I think are recognizing more and more these days, it's going to the top. I mean, the top 1% of earners in Canada and globally are making the bulk of the new money that has been created through globalization, through getting rid of barriers to trade. That money is going straight up to the top.
Oh, so global trade, international trade, benefits the rich.
Exactly.
Okay, the rest of us are not benefiting so much or not benefiting at all?
Well, some countries, I suppose, relatively speaking, some countries have done better under the era of free trade than other countries. right? So there are still rich countries, the United States, Canada, that do relatively better under the free trade system than, say, you know, Peru or, you know, a lot of African countries, for example.
So more developed countries benefit more.
Well, it's I suppose, I mean, the example used is usually Germany to say, is free trade good? People point to Germany and they say they're an export-driven economy, right? They produce a lot of things that people want to buy, high-value, high-quality stuff. They have high employment in Germany. But, you know, the reality is not everybody can be Germany. And the reality under the free trade model, under globalization, is the opposite, is that most countries have seen manufacturing leave their economy. In Canada in particular, this is true. Manufacturing has left Canada, and we're increasingly an exporter of raw resources, barely processed goods. And this is very much a result of free trade. So, you know, while free trade does take down barriers, like in terms of tariffs, it takes down barriers to trade, it also puts up barriers to what governments can do to become Germany, right? So Canada could never become Germany under the free trade model simply because we've lost the ability to help industries progress to the point where they're exporting and producing things and exporting them that people want to buy. So there's, you know, there's a blanket prohibition in NAFTA on performance requirements, which are, you know, buy local conditions, which are, you know, a requirement that you process some natural resources here in Canada. Any kind of performance requirement on a company is prohibited under NAFTA. And the goal of free trade is to get rid of that kind of government meddling in the economy.
The goal of free trade is to get rid of government meddling?
Yeah, exactly.
So therefore, trade agreements benefit multinational companies, and they put governments at a disadvantage. Governments can't govern because of free trade agreements.
And that was expressly the point of the free trade agreements and the era of globalization. You know, you shouldn't be meddling as governments in the free flow of whether it's money, investment, or trade. It's really driven by multinational companies, therefore you should leave them alone as much as possible.
So free trade, I'm getting the impression the free trade agreements benefit multinational companies, but not local companies. And they put governments at a disadvantage because it takes away their ability to govern within their boundaries.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair, and that's one of the basis, one of the reasons why the Council of Canadians and other organizations in Canada are still skeptical of the free trade model as the, you know, the panacea that the government thinks it is for all of our economic issues.
Well, tell me more about this. As I understand, under free trade agreements, multinational companies can sue governments. So a company from Germany could sue Canada, the Canadian government, if what?
Well, for a number of reasons, this is really where the investment treaties come in. So under NAFTA, there is an investment chapter in NAFTA which grants foreign companies, in this case it was U.S. and Mexican companies, rights that national companies here in Canada don't enjoy. And this can be rights to be free from regulatory or indirect expropriation. So say an environmental policy has the effect, the indirect effect of actually undermining a company's profits, then if it's an American company, they can sue you. We've seen this many times in Canada under NAFTA. So
you mean American companies have sued the Canadian government?
Dozens of times.
Because of environmental regulations?
Yeah, there's been 34 attempted lawsuits under NAFTA by American companies. There's been fewer successful ones. There's some that are being arbitrated right now. But the most recent one, or one of the more recent ones, is exactly this case. It's a company called Lone Pine Resources. It's suing Canada under NAFTA because the Quebec government put in place a moratorium on fracking, right? Hydraulic fracturing for natural gas, which of course, you know, involves high pressure blasting of shale formations to get the gas out, right? The gas comes up the well. And it's been shown to have a huge impact on water nearby, whether it's, you know, groundwater or even surface water. Mm-hmm. People have probably seen the videos of, you know, someone turning on their tap and lighting the water on fire. They're, of course, people living close to these fracking wells. And so the Quebec government has said we're going to go slow. We want to explore the environmental impacts, and we're going to put a freeze on exploration. Mm-hmm. And this company has filed a NAFTA lawsuit for $250 million in compensation for that environmental policy.
They want to be compensated because the government took action to protect the environment.
Exactly. Some treaties allow an arbitration panel to overturn a government policy, so they can order that the country change their policy completely to satisfy the investor. That's not the case with NAFTA, but under NAFTA, as you just said, we can regulate for environmental protection or public safety, but if it interferes with the rights of the company under that investment chapter in NAFTA, they have a right to compensation.
So companies have rights under NAFTA that supersedes the government's right to govern.
That's right. The government can be acting legally under its constitutional rights to make environmental policy, to make resource conservation policy. Even Canada's patent regime, its patent policy has been challenged in the past several months, last November, by Eli Lilly, which is an American pharmaceutical company, mm-hmm. which is claiming that Canada's patent system violates its NAFTA rights. So, you know, a completely legal WTO, World Trade Organization consistent patent regime is being challenged by a company who claims that it violates, it unfairly expropriated its investments, its profits in Canada. So they're basically using NAFTA to try and get longer patent protections out of Canada. Of course, is, you know, ridiculous, I think, to a lot of people to think about that an investment tribunal, which is essentially three people, usually three men, who hang out behind closed doors in an office tower somewhere in New York for, you know, a few months. They get paid several hundred dollars an hour to talk about whether or not Canada has violated this company's investment rights. And then they make a decision at the end of the day that's binding on Canada. And there's no space for an appeal. There's no space to test that decision through the courts. They simply say, you owe this company however many millions of dollars for violating their NAFTA rights. And that's the last word.
Well, the picture is building from what you're saying that these free trade agreements, or at least these aspects of these free trade agreements, benefit multinational companies that work outside of a nation's boundaries and put the national government at a disadvantage. It puts multinational companies above national governments. So if multinational companies are given rights that are stronger than national governments, why do national governments sign these agreements?
I think for the most part, this government we have, the Harper government right now, very much agrees with this idea that multinationals should be able to do largely what they want to do.
And have more power
and
in
have
Canada
more power.
Than the Canadian government.
Yeah. So if you think about
why would the Harper government want multinational businesses to have more power in Canada than the Canadian government?
Well, if you look at what are its main objectives? We've seen the Harper government lower environmental regulations several times using budget omnibus bills, you know, to gut environmental legislation. We've seen them talk about being an energy superpower over and over again. They're looking at how do they get more stuff out of the ground in Canada, not just overseas, but they're looking at how do we make it easier for companies, no matter who they are, no matter where they're from, to get stuff out of the ground in Canada with the least resistance possible.
For selling natural resources, then, it's better that the government be powerless?
Precisely. I mean, they give these companies, whether it's okay. from the United States or Europe or China, they give them this kind of trump card in a way.
It's a trump card, yes.
I would say it's a trump card. So they can't, you know, these companies can't get out of, they can't avoid legislation, environmental legislation. But what they can do is they can threaten to sue you if you're going to put in place any restrictions, any barriers in front of them to getting this stuff out of the ground or piping it, you know, from, for example, the tar sands, piping it out to the West Coast. You know, the more they can directly challenge government decisions that get in the way of those projects. And so, of course, the Harper government supports these treaties because they help him do what he wants to do here. And they help Canadian mining and energy companies do the same thing in other countries. They give Canadian mining companies that trump card in other countries. For example, Tanzania or Cameroon or, you know, Peru or Colombia, where they can then sue and threaten to sue those governments to avoid, sometimes to avoid even putting in place legislation to begin with, to avoid putting in place those environmental protections to begin with.
Let's think beyond the Harper government for a second, because as the pendulum swings, this is just the government of the moment. But you're saying that the Harper government of the moment can sign these free trade agreements. The next government that comes in 5 or 10 years is then hamstrung by these free trade agreements signed by the Harper government.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way that a future government can get out of these free trade agreements or certain clauses?
Yeah, they can. Usually there's, like in NAFTA, for example, there's a 6-month escape clause. So you can give notice, 6 months notice, we're pulling out and tearing up the agreement, and then it will go into effect.
Is this a total thing or clause by clause?
It's a total thing. If you wanted to go clause by clause, they would have to reopen negotiations. It would be extremely messy and complicated.
But of course, country can withdraw from the total agreement with a 6-month notification?
That's right, and that's typical for free trade agreements too. With investment treaties, you know, they're actually locked in normally. The protections in the investment treaty, so we talked about some of them, this right to be, right to compensation, you know, when a policy gets in the way of profits, those rights live on for 15 years, sometimes 20 years after a treaty is canceled.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, governments don't cancel these treaties. They become part of the legal, international legal framework or landscape that countries just have to live with, you know. So you get a new government, they want to do all these great things, and then they find they're running up against the trade bureaucrats within the government who are saying, well, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that, because that's going to violate this or that investment or trade agreement. So they really are a powerful tool, like the most powerful tool we have out there, to make sure that multinational corporations get what they want most of the time. That's really what's going on here.
Well, if free trade agreements benefit multinational companies almost to the exclusion of everyone else, multinational companies benefit more than everybody from these free trade agreements. Why aren't free trade agreements negotiated among multinational companies? Why do governments get involved in these things at all?
You know, all of a sudden it becomes the thing to do to sign free trade agreements. Governments have lost track of whether or not they work. They don't necessarily assess the impacts of subsequent free trade agreements on the Canadian economy. They don't take a breather. You know, they don't take a step back and say, is this working for us?
So if there's no evaluation of free trade agreements by governments, what about the Council of Canadians? Does the Council of Canadians evaluate the relative success or failures of free trade agreements?
Yeah, well, we do certainly, and we would look to other organizations that do continue to evaluate them, whether it's the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, other institutes in the United States as well. There's a lot of institutes that continue to monitor these agreements and the impacts they're having on, you know, human rights, environmental policies, and democratic options, local governments, that
wages.
Kind of thing. Wages, exactly.
Yeah. Well, what's the scorecard? Is there a framework for evaluating free trade agreements? Is there a scorecard? Are they like 70% positive? Or
I would say an interesting scorecard we've seen came out recently is Jim Stanford. He's an economist, chief economist with the Canadian Auto Workers. He's looked at Canada's bigger free trade agreements from the past, you know, 20 years. And he shows that in each case, in almost every case, I should say, exports went up slower than imports from those countries. And in fact, Canada's trade deficit has worsened with the majority of countries it's signed free trade agreements with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you hear a government saying free trade is about trade, you can just point to these stats to say, well, actually, it seems to be about worsening your trade balance with other countries, right? Because we have better trade balances with countries where we don't have free trade agreements than those that we do. So you can't say this is good for exports, right? That's one balance sheet we've got to look at too. I like to use this example too. When it comes to public services or social programs in Canada, I can't think of a significant new or improved social or public program in Canada that's been put into place since NAFTA was signed. You know, you can point to a number of areas where environmental regulations have been undermined through subsequent governments. You know, you can point to the mid-2000s when the Paul Martin government was deregulating and cutting transfers to the provinces. You can point to these kinds of this race to the bottom in a way, right, for standards and wages. But I can't think of any significant improvements to social programs, right? This is, in my view, this is the real legacy of free trade, is it's the point where the government stopped doing what you hope it would be doing, which is looking out for everyone and improving everyone's lives, and where they just let the markets, you know, in quotation marks, in scare quotes, let the markets do whatever they're going to do. And if in Canada that means we're just digging up more gold and exporting it to Europe, there's been a huge increase in gold exports from Ontario to Europe in the past 5 years. In fact, it's the major export of Ontario to Europe now, whereas at one point it might have been manufactured products. You know, I think this is the legacy of the free trade era in Canada.
So free trade benefits multinational companies. It puts national governments at a disadvantage. It weakens social legislation. Causes wages to stagnate as manufacturing jobs disappear from the country, and weakens environmental law. So there are, as far as scorecards go, somebody's winning, but it doesn't seem to be us. Mm. But let's talk now about communities. So these are national agreements signed by federal governments. What is the impact of free trade agreements on local government, community government?
They're the ones who will feel this stuff first, right?
Feel the impact, feel the pain, feel the disadvantages of free trade agreements.
Yeah, exactly. It is not inseparable from policy choices that provincial governments and federal governments have made. So, you know, in the same period, we've seen a lot of downgrading of responsibilities under the municipal level. Meanwhile, if they've got factories and other big employers just picking up and walking away, then, you know, not only are you putting a lot of unemployed people out on the street, but you're lowering your tax base, so they get hurt twice. They get hurt from having responsibilities downgraded onto them and not having the money to pay for those new responsibilities. So municipalities are, you know, the ones who are being hit the hardest, I think, across Canada right now. And we see it in their demands for more revenue from the federal government in order to pay for and maintain their services. They're hurting. They simply can't. They can't keep up, and I think that's another direct result of just the laissez-faire, sign free trade agreements and cross your fingers approach of the federal government. So that's one way they're feeling it. The other way is all these restrictions we were talking about on government flexibility, on their ability to say, well, we want to encourage some development here. We want to, you know, encourage some local development here where there's a lot of people who might not be as employed as they used to be. We want to buy local, you know, we want to support local business, this kind of thing. At the same time, you've got new trade agreements telling cities they can't do that anymore either. So not only are our existing companies leaving town, but they're losing the tools they need to encourage other companies to do well.
Are you saying that free trade agreements prevent communities from adopting buy local policies?
They didn't used to, but it's always been the objective, the goal of this free trade regime, I guess, this idea that it would apply to all levels of government. And so we've seen, in particular, in the Canada-Europe Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, there's going to be a chapter that prohibits local preferences, buy local policies. It just flat out prohibits it on contracts over a certain amount of money. The threshold is about $300,000 for when a city buys goods, you know, or when it buys services, when it hires a contractor, for example, engineering contractor, environmental services. There's any number of things a city buys, right, to function. It won't be allowed to prefer the local bidder if CETA comes into place. If CETA signed the way it's been conceived now.
It has to open the bids to European companies and treat them equally to a local bidder.
This is it. It's not even just that. We won't even be able to tell a national bidder that, you know, a certain amount of the goods or a certain amount of that product you're providing us or service you're providing us has to be locally sourced, you know. So CETA isn't just about not discriminating between European and Canadian companies. So yes, you're right that we wouldn't be able to say no to a European company that bid that has no investment at all in Canada or in the community where the bid happened, where the project is happening. Not only that, we won't be able to tell any company, whether they're Canadian or European, that they have to buy certain local products as they satisfy that bid. So an example you can use is food, right? So say you want to require your public buildings to source an increasing amount of food locally, which is what they're doing in Toronto. It's what the Ontario government seems to want to do with its new Local Food Act. That becomes impossible under CETA because it's a condition. It's a condition on the procurement, on the purchase, that is prohibited. We've seen the chapter. We're not making this up, right? We've seen the chapter. That kind of buy local rule will be illegal under the agreement.
Well, this is not a pretty picture. We're talking about international trade agreements that seem to benefit multinational companies that aren't located in this country, and none of the advantages come to this country. It's just incomprehensible that people would want to have free trade agreements if there are no benefits. Why do people not rise up and say there are no benefits for us? We don't want this free trade agreement. Well, how do these free trade agreements get through and get approved without people knowing about them or protesting them? Why do people accept free trade agreements if there are no benefits for them?
It's a good question. It's one we obviously struggle with at the Council of Canadians, because you're right. If you go and ask people, do you support a free trade deal with the European Union? You know, it's consistently 70-80% have said, yeah, sure. You know, if you just leave it at that, free trade agreement, the impression you get is this is a good thing naturally.
Because one would think that trade is a good thing.
Exactly.
We want more trade because it should be good, but...
But, you know, look under the surface, and it's a different picture. And that's what we try to do at the Council of Canadians, and other groups like the Trade Justice Network here in Canada are trying to do that. We're trying to show Canadians the real face of free trade agreements.
And the real face of free trade agreements is someone else outside the country is benefiting, but we are not.
Well, someone else outside...
Is it that clear?
I think it's a little bit... I mean, there's people in Canada, like we said, who will benefit from free trade.
The very rich.
There's multinational companies in Canada,
gold
too.
Gold companies.
Exactly.
Oil companies.
Oh, and, you know, it's, you know... Mining, resource,
mining.
Financial. I mean, there are companies that do look to they love these things because they constrain government actions wherever they want to operate. You know, in terms of people fighting back against these deals, which I think you're asking why we might not see it as much as we did during NAFTA and the free trade fights of the 1980s, I think it's because the government has learned a lesson, right? Like when it was very very public and out there talking about how great these deals would be, they drew attention to the trade agreements. You know, they drew attention to what was wrong with them as well as some of these benefits they were talking about. What was maybe exaggerated about the benefits and what was being downplayed about some of the impacts that free trade was going to have on the Canadian economy. So they just stopped talking about them. I mean, they don't really go out and say a lot about this new free trade deals they're signing. They just... You know, out of the blue, you'll see a government press release that says, Canada's just signed a new free trade deal with Honduras. You know, with CETA, what we've done is we have gone in, the CETA, the Canada-Europe deal, is we have gone to the places where people are going to get hit the most, so our communities, our local governments, and we're trying to inform people at that level of the impact it's going to have, the prohibition on buy local, the new rights it's going to give European companies to sue Canada for local policies that get in the way of their profits. And what we found is they're very receptive, and when they hear about it, they're very concerned. And in fact, across Canada, more than 50 municipalities, including Toronto, including Victoria, Mississauga, Hamilton, have passed motions saying they want to be excluded from this deal.
Is it possible for communities to be excluded from a free trade agreement?
Well, it is. I mean, it is. Really, it is. It's possible for the provinces in this case, because the provinces will have a final say, right? It's possible for them to say, you're not touching our municipal governments. They need the right to buy local. They need the right to support local businesses, you know, hands off. I mean, that tells you what these agreements do. They're about, again, I mean, they're about multinational profits, right? They're about eating away at public services and letting multinational companies gobble up what they can. So those aspects of these trade agreements, I think, have to come out as well. They have to be about giving governments, there has to be some space in them to create public services, to protect the environment, to say no to major projects. You have to be able to have the right to do all of this without coming face to face with a trade challenge from another country or an investment challenge from a multinational company.
We've been talking with Stuart True from the Council of Canadians, discussing international trade deals and how international trade deals affect people and communities. Community exchange is an ongoing discussion of issues affecting communities around the world. Community exchange is brought to you by Comfest Radio.